A lot of stunned faces in the Kentucky fan section as the shot is launched. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
Hello and welcome to a special emergency 538 podcast, sort of hot takedown, sort of not hot takedown. I'm Chadwick Matlin, an editor for 538. I'm here with the one and only Nate Silver in a hotel room in Indianapolis. Hi, Nate.
Make it seem more glamorous than that, Chad.
I mean, Nate, look around. Or, yeah, it's true. And our producer, Jody Avergan. Hey, Jody.
It's room 346. That's a good number.
446.
Four,
are you trying to
436?
Are you trying to lead people to not come stalk us in the hotel?
I already forgot the number of my own room.
So we're here to talk about last night's NCAA men's tournament action, which was thrilling, especially in the latter.
One good game.
Yeah, so we should say at the outset, Nate, would you like to declare your bias in this conversation?
Yeah, so I am from East Lansing, Michigan. When I realized they would, as they always seem to do, make the Final Four, I scrambled to get tickets. My dad drove down from East Lansing, too. But he's also a graduate of the University of Wisconsin, so he had kind of a two-for-one, as it were, and was very pleased by the outcome of the second game.
Okay, so you went 1-for-2. Yeah. And so all three of us were in the stadium in this giant, cavernous 73,000 people were there. It's the football stadium for the Colts. And we're sort of still wrapping our head around that Kentucky went down to Wisconsin. Did you guys – well, so we should say if the 538 model said there was a 31% chance that Wisconsin would beat Kentucky, did you guys trust in that 31%, or do you think maybe –
I think that seemed to me like a pretty sound forecast. I mean, first of all, if you had gone to Vegas, that's about the odds you would have gotten, right? Where Kentucky was a 3-1 or so favorite. You know, Wisconsin's a really good team, though. For the whole tournament, the model had said that this is the matchup for Kentucky to be worried about. The national semifinal, whether it's Wisconsin or Arizona potentially also, you know, Wisconsin, to flip this around, was a slight underdog against Arizona, was a slightly bigger underdog against Kentucky. We haven't favored against Duke. So this half of the bracket is stacked. Wisconsin's gotten no favors from the committee. Kentucky, though, has an eye there with it winding up being a pretty chalky tournament. And, you know, Kentucky, I think, or Wisconsin any other year, we'd say this is not just a national champion-worthy team, but a team that's maybe one of the best we've seen in the past half decade or so.
I saw someone tweet this morning and say, Nate Silver nailed it again. He only said Kentucky had a 50-some percent chance to win, and look, they lost. And it was like, you can cut probabilistic odds in one direction and sort of hedge and say, this is why we make probabilistic odds. This person was trying to give you a credit by the nature of the probabilistic odds. But what was it? What was the odd going into last night's game that Kentucky was going to lose? It was 30.
So 31. 30, so no,
what's 60, interesting is that. Is that, as our Ben Morris pointed out today, when Duke beat Michigan State and won by a big margin, so it's like, right. Oh, Duke is really good, Kentucky momentarily went back under 50% to win both games. They were still a favorite individually in each game, but it's like, you know, a 0.7 chance twice is 0.49. This is getting very nerdy.
It was a coin flip going into the weekend basically all around.
And let's not neglect Duke. I mean, Duke has been destroying people, right?
Quietly, almost. We haven't really talked about them on Hot Takedown the whole 3 weeks we've
Duke destroyed Michigan State. I hate to say it. They destroyed Gonzaga. They beat Utah soundly, right? They won their first two games by big margin. I mean, Duke is another team we might be saying ordinarily would be a heavy favorite in tomorrow night's game, and instead we have them as the slightest underdog.
So that's my question is, you know, going into this weekend, everyone was saying, oh, man, the two best teams ended up on the same side of the bracket. Does the way Duke won yesterday say anything about, okay, maybe there really was this heavyweight sitting on the other side of the bracket?
Well, the model spiked their probabilities to probability to win the whole thing by 13 points, I think, after Duke blew out Michigan State. So that suggests that they were performing even better than was already expected.
So what's interesting is that Wisconsin has beat the better teams. Right, they've had a really tough draw. They've maxed out who you can play in every round so far. They haven't won their games by an overwhelming margin, whereas Duke has been steamrolling people. And so the margin factors into the updated win probabilities and the updated power ratings the model has. Basically, it's saying both these teams have had terrific tournaments. Duke has not quite caught up to Wisconsin in the forecast, but it's really close. Vegas is the game as a pick 'em. I was surprised by that. My intuition was that you know, Wisconsin after last night would be favored by 3 points or so in Vegas, and we'd go and be saying, oh, here, Duke now is overlooked. But I guess, you know, maybe Duke is never exactly overlooked. So it's a pick 'em in Vegas. We have Wisconsin favored by a point or a point and a half or something.
And before we move on to talk about the Duke in the final, I want to dwell on why it's so hard to go undefeated in modern men's college basketball.
Yeah.
Because what we're seeing on the women's side is that there's a dominant team like UConn that, while not having gone undefeated this season, went undefeated last season. And so the parity isn't such the way it is in the men's game. Are we ever going to see another men's undefeated team? I mean, and that's the obvious question, but is it just a matter of time?
One of us should kneel, or Ben Morris should do something that kind of simulates this in some way or another. My intuition is that we're a little bit unlucky to not have had any undefeated since 1976.
Wichita State was set up to go undefeated last year as well.
You could have had Wichita State do it. It's hard to do it, but, you know, just intuitively, I mean, how many teams have entered the tournament undefeated? Like 8 or 9 or something like that, right? You would think that one of those would win out, whether it's a Wichita State, where they were not the favorite in the tournament last year, or a Kentucky, or UNLV, where they were. I would guess UNLV was probably in the same 40% pre-tournament range. But I think it's been a little bit unlucky.
Before we get to what the model says about the final, can we just revel in being in that arena last night at that moment? I mean, it instantly entered my sort of pantheon of sporting events I'd seen live. It was pretty remarkable, and I just wonder, sort of waking up the next morning, kind of what moment of the game sticks in your mind?
I mean, it was it reminded me a little bit of the Super Bowl, which now I sound really braggy, but like last year's Super Bowl, which I also went to, where the game just kind of had a life of its own at some point. But yeah, those three possessions, I don't know if they were in a row or almost in a row, and I want to talk about this later from a coaching strategy standpoint, where you had shot clock violations or near shot clock.
It was three
violations.
Out of four.
Three out of four. I mean, that was the turning point in the game, I think.
I think the turning point of the game was when a shot clock violation wasn't called on Wisconsin, which we didn't really realize in the stadium. It was interesting. You know, one of the things about going to live sporting events now is you don't have necessarily the full
awareness. You don't have the official. But people, you know, the Kentucky fans, and I'll talk about the Kentucky fans we had sitting next to us, right? You know, they knew right away that there's just no way you can physically execute that play, right, in 3 seconds or whatever it was.
And this
right?
is Nigel Hayes's sort of double attempted layup under the basket, right?
Yeah, so, you know, just, you don't have to, it's like the Trent Tucker rule I was reading about this morning, right, where the time when he caught and shoot with like 0.1 second on the clock, and it's like, that's just physically impossible, you know what I mean? He ran a good basketball play. I mean, you know, Nigel Hayes, I think, is underrated among all the other basketball stars on the Badgers. But, you know, there's no way it was completed in 3 seconds. The thing was, though, Calipari, I think, sort of lost his composure a little bit. He called a timeout when you might have needed that timeout later in the game instead. I mean, I thought his whole coaching down the stretch room was strange. I mean, I think there was also, though, in the kind of in the second half, so these Kentucky fans, like I said, sitting next to us, they were nice fellows, real chatty throughout the first half, right? And I think they kind of assumed that once the half went in tied, right, that Kentucky, the natural talent would take over and they'd find some way to pull away. And so kind of the mood changed a lot. I mean, Wisconsin was up by 7 or 8 points before Kentucky came back and then pulled ahead, right? But the mood changed a lot. We're like, oh, shit, you know, the Badgers are good. They're not going away.
I thought, as did you, that those defensive stops were really just a remarkable moment and maybe rattled Calipari and sort of got him out of his rhythm. I mean, it's got to be tough to go down there over and over and over and get stifled when you're just used to sort of being able to impose your will. And Chad and I were talking last night, like, I think a really coordinated, really effective team defensive stop in basketball is like the most satisfying thing to watch basically in sports. And it happened, you know, over and over and over. The other funny thing was that Wisconsin wasn't exactly capitalizing on those moments. It's not like they were going down to the other side of the court and, you know, hitting threes, or it was sort of like turned into this defensive grudge match for a stretch there, but it still felt really, really high level and like it was executing really well, but it was just defensive execution instead of offensive execution.
And to go back to the Hayes thing just for another minute, is it the case that Kentucky's fans have a legitimate gripe that one play like that in a game that was, despite the final score of 7 points, that was really a free throw thing down the stretch, can one play swing a whole game like that end up finishing with a 7-point margin? You know what I mean? Do we have a sense of
we get into weird existential territory here.
That's where I always like,
you know,
to
yeah.
Hey, we're in a hotel room in Indianapolis. Let's
even apart from the momentum, I mean, obviously college basketball, the strategy late in the game is very contingent on the score line, you know. I mean, that was as important a play as you saw in the game, I think, right?
That was the highest leverage play, you think, sort of towards the
probably outcome. Not literally the highest leverage, but certainly, and the fact that then Kentucky kind of bungled this next possession and seemed a little out of sorts, you know. I guess, do you know, though, I mean, so it's not a reviewable act, right? They can't stop the game and say, you know.
Even I think maybe, it's funny because in football, that kind of thing would have been reviewed and the coach would have called a timeout to give more time to hopefully get
see, when
that
you're when you're in the stands and you're used to watching, you know, probably like both, well, maybe not you, Chad, but I watch more NBA than college basketball, right? So I'm like, well, maybe he called timeout there because then it can be reviewed right. or something, right? And I don't know. But you don't know these things when you're actually sitting there in the stands and there's kind of this moment of confusion a little bit.
And if anything, you know, when you're in the stadium, the momentum of the game stops a little bit the moment that there's a TV timeout or a timeout itself. And so,
yeah, but that's a lot better in basketball than in football. I mean, you go to a football game and
there's
I think
a lot of standing around.
There's right. a lot of standing around. I think in some ways going to live football has become so overrated, it's underrated. But still, there's a lot of downtime in an NFL game in particular.
This whole thing, though, just felt like total artifice. I mean, they're playing on this tiny court inside this massive stadium raised up. I know Chad is obsessed with this notion of kind of what happens to your depth perception and your shooting ability in a huge stadium like this. But it just felt like it was this little diorama happening in the middle of this huge
It did, but I will say it was pretty amazing to be surrounded by four different, or in this case, three different colors, four different fan bases, and to feel the different parts of the stadium rise up or sink down with every shot that hit. And the amazing thing was that it really felt like 65 to 70% of the stadium was there for the second match, was there for Wisconsin.
Oh, at least,
versus Kentucky.
There were very few Duke fans there. The Michigan State fans, I think, maybe they should have learned differently, but didn't really expect to be there, right? Whereas it was all throughout the city, all Wisconsin fans, all Kentucky fans, and I think they kind of regarded that game as a national championship.
And Jody, you saw some interesting stuff after the game with the economy of what happens with the tickets for Monday night from the losing fans.
You know, I'd been trying to report out this sort of scalping economy, and no surprise, a lot of scalpers are sort of a little reluctant to talk to a reporter.
Sure.
So I got some good stories, but nothing on tape. But you know, throughout the day, there's just this ebb and flow and rise and fall of ticket prices. And right after the game, all these Kentucky fans stream out into the stadium, and they're like, you know, most of them are crying and they're walking home, and Wisconsin fans and then ticket scalpers, but Wisconsin fans are descending upon them saying, hey, I'll buy your tickets for Monday night's game. And they're, you know, I talked to a bunch of Wisconsin folks who were saying, I just texted my buddy, it's 4 hours away, saying, I'll get you a ticket, come over. Yeah,
right.
And there was no negotiating leverage on the part of the Kentucky fans. They were selling $1,100 tickets for $100 was the best they could get, and they were just getting rid of them. I talked to a couple people who said, okay, I'm going to sort of begrudgingly come. It's still a really good – but the fact that you could buy – last night there was a sort of half-hour window where you could buy a ticket – to a national final game for $100 was pretty remarkable.
So let's move on to the finals game.
Well, I want to talk more about Calipari.
Let's go, Nate.
Yeah.
Nate has some takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just takes some policy.
You know, so these possessions right in a row. Kentucky didn't score for something like 5.5 minutes of game time, from 6.5 minutes in the second half to about 1 minute.
And that was when Wisconsin went on their 15-4 run, or somewhere, and that was what helped Wisconsin go on their big run at the end of the game.
Yeah. But, you know, Wisconsin gets all this credit for lockdown defense. Kentucky did not play with a lot of urgency during those possessions.
Urgency is one of those words that comes up when we talk about sporting events. Like, what does urgency mean?
Meaning,
exactly?
I think they ran too much time off the clock, right? They're playing at an unnecessarily slow pace, and I think there are a couple of mistakes here, right? You know, number one, I understand that if you're ahead, you want to have fewer possessions. But if you're the better team, in theory, you want to have more possessions, right? The more you play with a small advantage that you exploit, you know, you don't want to be what Princeton would do or Northern Iowa would do or whatnot, right? You want to be able to play more basketball. You know, number two, Wisconsin is best in the half court game. That's their natural pace. They paid, I think, like the eighth slowest pace out of all of Division I basketball last year. So removing the transition game from your repertoire entirely, you know, taking that out of your repertoire, I think, is a bad move. And number three, if you're doing anything that kind of disrupts the natural flow of your offense, I mean, Kentucky has a slightly weird offense. It's sort of almost NBA-style offense in which you say, on the one hand, oh, their shot selection isn't great. On the other hand, they have a lot of talented kids who can make shots that other guys in college basketball can't, right?
And they work inside-outside in a way that a lot of NBA teams do.
Yeah, but I don't think they have the kind of offense where you have a identifiable leader on the floor where if you run 10 or 15 seconds off, all of a sudden you know how to regain control of that possession. So I think it's a mistake. I was reading a KenPom post on two-for-one opportunities, which is a clear-cut case where, hey, you know, it'd be nice to take two shots to your opponent's one. And he said, you know, it's really only a very small edge because if you make your possession even the tiniest bit less efficient, that hurts. And there are so many weird things that can happen. So, you know, Kentucky, by running time off the clock, well, it turns out they would have loved to have an extra 45 seconds, minute and a half on the clock at the end of the game.
And right? You're convinced that it's Kentucky that took their foot off the gas rather than Wisconsin that lifted it off the gas. That wasn't the defense.
This is where when you're in the stadium, right, and you're not able to see, I haven't seen the replay of the game yet this morning, right? But Wisconsin is not a great defensive team over the course of the year. They were like 60th best. Mm-hmm. They're adequate defensively, pretty good defensively, but they're not a lockdown defense against the, you know, a Kentucky team that had scored the ball, had shot the ball pretty well all game, hadn't had a lot of trouble scoring. So you know, my impression as a fan is that they were slowing the game down, right, pretty early on, you know, with 6.5 minutes to go. And then, yeah, if you have a 10-second, 12-second possession, right, it's much easier to be a lockdown defense.
I was surprised talking to Kentucky fans in after the game that a lot of them had the same analysis. I was expecting, well, a lot of them grumbled about the refs, and so, but a lot of people put it on Coach Cal and said, you know, we just slowed it down too much. We left our style of play. This is a coaching conundrum in like every sport. I mean, Chip Kelly faces this every time he has a lead going into the end of the fourth quarter. Do you change up your – how much does the clock start to take over? And I think – I don't know. I wonder if coaches overthink it and try and play the clock as much as say –
I mean, it was with 6.5 minutes left they started the slowdown thing.
And the trick is that it was a tight game. You know, if you're up by 20 the way that Duke was, then you do slow it down.
If you're up by 20, then you do it. If
you do whatever you want.
If they were Michigan State, if they were a 7 seed, right, and they know, well, if we kept playing this game – to infinity, we'd probably lose against Duke, right? But they had, you know, the arguments weren't very strong for it, and they were doing it when they were only up 4 points, only up 2 points, tied even. It was just really strange.
But interestingly, Calipari is sort of invincible a little bit at Kentucky. I mean, the loudest ovation for
hot seat.
You think he's on the hot seat? This is it? No. I mean, so the loudest ovation when Kentucky came out was for Calipari. It was, I mean, like, and we've talked a lot on Hot Takedown about sort of the cult of the coach in college basketball, but it was really evident with Krzyzewski, where the Duke fans were literally bowing to him as he came out on the court, and with Calipari, where there was such – it was very much a – Calipari was the steward of the program. You know, he was the – it was only going to go as far as Calipari took them, and maybe, Nate, what you're saying is that really became true last night.
I mean, I guess he's not had a – you know, I was listening to some hot take show on the way over this morning, right? And you're like, well, he kind of blew it in the final last year. He's also a guy where – you know, he took that Kentucky team last year. Were they an 8 seed or a 7 seed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the national title game. So you can't say he's a poor postseason coach overall. I just think he kind of, you know, didn't really think through. I mean, part of what surprised me too is there weren't a lot of tactical adjustments at the half, really. I mean, Wisconsin, you know, wasn't scoring much inside at all, whereas Kentucky was. I mean, you know, Towns was terrific last night. I mean, they played a pretty good game overall. You know, they somehow couldn't get Booker involved. But, you know, so one thing I was thinking you were going to ask me is kind of, if you replay this game 100 times, how often would each team win, right? And I kind of think it depends. If you played last night and Kentucky was playing with, you know, I think a coach that didn't have very good tactics in mind, I think it probably was a 50-50 outcome, right? If the teams could adjust and adapt to one another, if Kentucky found more ways to take advantage of its superior depth, right, you know, then I think Kentucky would still win 7 out of 10 times or something. But in that game last night, I'm not sure if that was true.
So Have you exercised your Calipari takes? So can we move on to the final? I don't want to rush you.
But look, I said on Twitter last night that it was worse coaching than Pete Carroll in the Super Bowl. And you know, I'm not sure if everyone agrees with that, but I think you know, I thought he had a bad game as a coach. I did not think Kentucky played a bad game as a team. I thought they played pretty well, actually. Wisconsin played great. And if you're going to pass some blame around, it goes to the coaching.
I just want to add that it was wonderful to see the Calipari histrionics up close.
Yeah.
You know, that guy is just – you know, I guess I was a little surprised at how much he was willing to let his emotions show. I mean, I know basketball coaches use emotions as like a coaching tool, but he was like showing just pure exasperation and almost, to me, what looked like defeatism, like over and over and over. You know, both hands on head, eyes rolled back, looking at the sky like everything is falling apart. As a player, you know, maybe you get used to it if Calipari is your coach. But, man, if you look over at your leader and he's basically got the, like, world is falling apart look on his face.
Well, the one thing – so the one smart takey thing that it's tempting to say is that, oh, Kentucky's never been in a situation before. That's not true, though. They've been down several times this
Columbia.
Year. Yeah.
The Columbia Lions.
Can you imagine if Columbia hadn't – I mean, Harry Enten would – yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were up by 10 points in the second half, and they only
trailed
won
against Columbia for, like, a big percentage of their minutes.
So the other thing, though, too, is I think you know, part of Kentucky's assumption or Calipari's assumption might have been that, you know, at some point Wisconsin will make a mistake, right? That our defense is so good that we don't even have to use our possessions that efficiently, right? If we're set in the half court two and they're under pressure, now there's not very much time on their clock, right? But Wisconsin has, according to KenPom, and you saw it last night, the most efficient offense, like, in the last 10 years in college basketball. And even without being able to score inside, you know, it's not such a safe assumption. It's a team that executes as well as Wisconsin does. You're not going to get back a couple of possessions by silly turnovers or bad shot selection. And so it was a much more dangerous strategy.
I think a fitting way to end this part of the conversation is the breaking news ticker that just scrolled across the ESPN screen in the back corner, which was that John Calipari is just announced to be elected into the men's NCAA Basketball Hall of Fame. So let's talk about the final for a second. It's Duke versus Wisconsin. The third Wisconsin had the first most efficient offense in the country, according to Ken Pomeroy, who is the patron saint of all college basketball coverage.
We're putting out, at the next Hot Takedown, we're putting out a KenPom swear jar. And every time we mention KenPom, we're throwing a quarter into the jar.
He's in our basketball Hall of Fame.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. So Wisconsin has the first most efficient offense, Duke the third most efficient offense in the country. Duke has the better defense. Nate, the 538 model says that it's a 53% chance that Wisconsin wins 47% of the time. Duke would win. Is this... I wasn't able to look back at the history. Is this the closest final that you can remember the model predicting?
The final last year was even closer. In fact, I think the final last year we initially had Kentucky favored. Then they had like an injury and it flipped and went to UConn instead, right? So we've had a couple of close finals. And usually what happens by the time you get to the final game is that you have teams that have survived a gauntlet, right? So even if Michigan State had won, you know, they would have been underdogs to Wisconsin, but not terribly heavy underdogs, because it would have gotten a lot of credit for having beat Duke last night, for example. And so it's not surprising to see the final game be close.
Just so we're clear, a 53-47 probability of closeness, does that mean it's going to be a close game? No, right? It just means that it's close about who wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's a slightly, because you have a big margin of error, but basically, you know, it's a coin flip tilt thing toward Wisconsin that we probably have in favor by 1 point.
I'm just curious about tomorrow night, whether there will be this sort of hangover effect. I mean, I feel like the narrative all along has been, you know, what's going to happen to Kentucky.
And it's a classic trap game for Wisconsin.
It's a classic trap game for Wisconsin, the national championship game.
I mean, they're pretty laid-back kids, you know, who have been dealing with the pressure pretty well, one would think. They had a lot of poise down the stretch. Now we sound like real hot take.
Yeah, poise. Guys. We said poise. We said
urgency.
Urgency. Yeah, we're going through our bingo card nicely.
You know, look, I think the environment will help them. There were not very many Duke fans here in Indianapolis. And anyone not a Duke fan is not going to root for Duke, especially it's one of the more likable college basketball teams to come around in a long time, right? So the whole arena is going to be pulling for Wisconsin. You know, in theory, that should help a little bit.
All right, so I think that does it for our emergency hot takedown. We'll eschew the credits this time because you don't have time for that in an emergency. But thanks for joining us. And hot takedown will be back on Tuesday, breaking down the men's championship game and a whole bunch of other subjects. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.